Hey, this is Dan Vanderkoy, business owner, entrepreneur, consultant, and team builder. I've been involved and helped build successful company cultures. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Joining me on the Authentic Persuasion Show today is Daniel Vanderkoy. Daniel is a business owner and entrepreneur up in a very small town in Washington State called Linden. He's built his companies and team around the phrase culture is king, which obviously, if you know me at all, you know that's why I want to talk to him about that, plus other things. Not only has he found freedom for growth in his business and opportunities to give back to communities, but he's also been able to find more quality time in his favorite job as being a dad. He focuses on sales, culture, business operations, does it for himself and for other company clients as with his consulting company. And this should be fun. Daniel, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks, Jason. Excited to be here and talk about some of these ideas today.
Yeah, it should be good. And first, a shout out to our mutual friend, Kyle Gillette. He's the one that connected us. I know that you guys are friends actually in person, in real life, in that same small town area, which seems weird these days. Not just COVID days. I mean, pre-COVID to actually have like business connections in town that are also online. Like, I don't know. It just seems weird because it's so virtual. And then COVID, of course, makes everything even more so. But Kyle's amazing. Shout out for anybody watching this or listening to this. If you haven't connected with Kyle, connect with him as well. LinkedIn. He and I did a show together. Lots of great stuff out there. He does a lot of very cool things. So I appreciate him and that. Let's start with this. So you have a lot of things going on insurance-wise and consulting. But the one thing I want to start with, which you literally just said right before we hit record, was in everything you tell your team and your training, your catchphrase is you don't want to be that weird guy at the barbecue.
Yeah.
I literally want to start with that. What does that mean? Where did that come from? What's the setup for don't be the weird guy at the barbecue?
Well, I think we've all been around those people where they can never turn it off and they can never just enjoy the moment and being present in what they're doing. And there's always an angle. And so for me, I always tell our team, I say, hey, every single thing you do as a salesperson is an opportunity, right? Every first impression you make, things like that, any decision you make always has a ripple effect, negative or positive. And it doesn't matter whether it's during the workday from 8:30 to 5 or if it's on the weekend at a barbecue. And so what happens is in sales, you get some people that are just over the top all the time hitting you. Hey, can I bid your home and auto insurance? Can I bid your retirement plan? Can I bid your commercial and whatever it might be? And they just won't back off. And it's even to the point when, you know, you're at your kid's basketball game or baseball game or something like that. And here comes this guy again, right? Like he's going to sit down on you and the whole time you can just tell it's just like laying it on thick and it's fake and it's not authentic. And it's just, and so over the years, I feel like in 10 years of sales, I just don't want to be that guy. Like when I go to my kids' games or I also coach high school baseball. And so when I'm coaching, things like that, like I just want to be in the moment. We talk to our baseball players all the time on our team at the high school. It's like, you can't focus too much on the future and the past doesn't do you any good in a game scenario. You need to be present where you're at in that moment. You know, if you're fielding a ground ball or throwing a pitch, you got to be present and just enjoy the time. And then maybe down the road the next week, say, hey, enjoy talking to you at the barbecue or whatever. Would you give me a crack at this? And that's kind of our philosophy. We aren't those guys that hound people. If people tell us no, we don't keep coming at them. At that point, I just tell our team, say back off, say, hey, do you mind if I touch base with you again next year? And I've got some of my largest accounts and clients that I love working with. They've told me no two or three times before. And now I've had them for 7-8 years. So it's just about not being the weird guy at the barbecue for my friends.
So why do you think that happens? I mean, I have my guess, but I want to hear what you think. Why does that weird guy, and again, we could be gender neutral and say guy or gal, man or woman, historically, it's the weird guy at the barbecue. But why does that happen? Where is that coming from?
I think a lot of times you have different corporations. A lot of these larger companies sometimes will set production goals, will set sales goals that you got to meet. And if you don't meet them, you're gone. I know of a guy that was in the insurance industry that worked for one of these big national things, and they had to sell, I think it was $500,000 or $600,000 in premium a year. And he hit like $450,000, right? And so he's still bringing in a good chunk of revenue for the agency, and they canned him. Like, you're gone. I don't care that you've been here for 5 years. You didn't hit it, you're gone. And that's not the case with everybody by any means. And I think it depends on your company and the team that's around you and that sort of thing. But for us and the companies that we work with our company at Mana, like, it's about that ongoing relationship. So we're not necessarily, we don't set actual, we have production goals that we want our sales team to hit. But for us, it's more about the activities that they're doing and the sales number. Because if you just focus on the sales side of it, you're not looking at the whole scope of what's happening in life too. And a lot of times, the bottom line, we all go to work to make money to support our families and or to support ourselves or whatever situation you'll be in. We have guys that, you know, they have three or four kids in our office that are sales guys. And then we have two 22-year-old guys that just started out of college. They don't have a family, right? And one of them's single, one of them's married. Like, so you get everywhere in between, but you never know what's going on in people's lives. And so we want them to feel like work's going to be a place that they're supported, that they're cared about. They're going to walk through things. And so for us, it's more about tracking the activities that you're doing. Let's create a plan that's going to lead to that success without just harping on like, hey, the bottom line's here. You didn't do this today, right? Let's make sure you're just checking off the activities. And we believe with our systems that we have in place that we've set up the structure for and our team has, that if they do those activities, we're going to see success over the long haul. Everyone has a different personality and a different way they're going to attack it. But the bottom line is we don't want to be those people that when you walk into a gym to watch your daughter's volleyball game, that people are going to like shun away and go the other way because they don't want to sit by you because you're just constantly hounding them. So let's just be normal. Let's live our lives. Let's live in community and let's do our best to put our best forward when that opportunity comes. And we knock it out of the park when that happens. And that's why we have over a 98% retention rate with our clients. So,
yeah. And something you touched on, I think, is the key is that a lot of it depends on the goals and focus of a company, an individual. It's usually a corporate culture situation, right? Which we'll talk about culture here in a little bit. But what is that driving force? Is it the result? And then is it a result at any cost? Or is it the activity? I'll also say that sometimes activity can be done wrong. Like you're talking about if you set the activity, when you're measuring that, you're holding your team to those levels and supporting them on accomplishing that activity, then they will get the result. I think, which is very true, but I think the challenge sometimes is that companies are setting it on a higher activity level or the classic, like it's a numbers game. So you should be handing out 25 business cards a day. Everybody you talk to, like in line at the grocery store. I mean, when I first saw that when I was in the mortgage business and then saw realtors and kind of the training that was out there was like, every person you talk to is a potential opportunity and you should be talking to them, asking them, and then handing them a business card and then trying to follow up. And it's just like, that's why people don't like engaging with somebody who's in sales, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes down to the narrative of, you know, you need to tell the story of why you do what you do and how you do it. And that, and for us, our goal as a company, I did a podcast, we did about 8 or 10 of them. And it got to be a little, I was like, you know, this isn't my gig. I'm not good at the editing and it costs a lot of money to pay someone to do it. And obviously like you and Kyle are much better than I am. I like being on this side of it, but we tried it. And one of our first ones was with Kaylee Bovenkamp, who does, she's one of my partners in Iron Band Consulting, but she's also the person that brought Mana Insurance Group from non-existent on Google to in the top three in a Google search within our county and our area within 6 months of being non-existent when I started it. And she's all of our operations now. And what's really interesting is allowing people to kind of take their gifting and then use it for what works for them. And so what we've done is Kaylee's been able to kind of draft a narrative of like, we're not trying to be the cheapest people out there or things like that. We're trying to make money as a company. The title of the podcast that we did was Unapologetic for Profit. And our goal is to make as much money as we can so that we can impact different people with that, whether it's our own families and our staff, and we can pay them better, we can give them better benefits. Or I work really closely with an orphanage in a school in Guatemala called Eagles Nest International. And like for us, for my own family, I've gone down there the last 10 years, every January. And like for us, we want to make as much money as we can, not so that we can build a bigger house or do these different things, which those aren't bad things necessarily, but how are we impacting people, right? And so for me, it's like, if we can get to the point where we're sending $50,000 to $100,000 a year down to the school and orphanage, and then that can set up different feeding centers and stuff throughout Central America, like that's where my heart and my passion is, right? So I love the sales side of things because I believe we have this side that we can do, we can make money, but we can truly help people and serve people. And what happens is a lot of times people in sales want to make the sale and then they're almost just kind of using their client, where we want to have that client. I want to have them until I retire at 65 and then pass them off to whoever's going to take over at that point for me, right? So it's about really taking care of people, serving people. And then what are we going to do with those funds, right? And like I said, we want to make sure we have good wages and benefit packages for our employees, but we also want to do a lot of stuff throughout the world for people who are in need, who need it more than we do.
When it comes to sales, right? And I think one of the big keys is what you're talking about, which is having this goal, having this vision. If nothing more, which I work with people on, is having a vision board and something you're going for, which I love that you talked about, like there's your vision of what you're going for and what you're building towards and what it all means to you, like why you want to grow and be successful. And then you have those early 20, one guy's single, one's married, no family, where they're at in their life and obviously tailoring their goals for them. And so obviously it's about setting these goals, having these things going on, but where do you see fear getting salespeople in trouble, and how have you managed that with your teams?
Yeah, fear is a real thing. And a lot of times people don't understand it until they've walked through it or had different situations come up with. A lot of salespeople struggle with anxiety. They struggle with worried about, are they going to be told no? And so those are things that affect the sales process. What are you setting up around your team to make sure that they learn how to deal with it, but they also have that side of things where when it does come up and they're struggling with it, they have an open avenue and a forum to share with that, right? And so what I found is that the best thing to get over that fear is just to do it. And so what we'll do in our office, a lot of times, if I notice our numbers are down or activities are down, we have a tracker that I get notified, and Kaylee in our office gets notified every day of how many activities were set for the day for them to do and then how many they actually did. So at 5 o'clock, there's an email that goes out to the entire sales team, every person on that, as well as kind of the direct people in leadership over that. And then I get looped in on it. So if I notice that the day before that we only hit 65% of our activity for that day on what we were supposed to do, then the next morning I come up, I usually go around the office and I just kind of check in and just say, hey, how was your night last night? How are things going? What's the rest of the week look like? Hey, but I saw this, like, what was the deal? And, oh, I actually caught up and I was able to get this and this account from this guy. So the meeting that I had an hour actually ended up taking me 3 or 4 hours because I met with him for an hour and I came back and I worked on this, right? So a lot of times there's a story behind that. But if it's just straight up because, like, you know, I got shot down 3 times this morning and so I thought I'd do busy work. And I always talk about that. Like, what's the thing that's actually going to make you money? What happens is when people get fearful or get nervous or tired of rejection, they do busy work. They try to get out of the lion's den a little bit instead of being aggressive with it and just keep powering through. They find other things to keep them busy that really don't make money. And so at that point, I'll say, all right, I got 5 people here that I'm going to call in the next hour. You guys need to call 5 people too. Or we're all going to do it. And it doesn't matter that I'm the owner of the agency or that those guys are younger or older. It doesn't matter. We just say, everyone's got to make 5 calls in the next hour. Let's go. One, boom. And we just do it. And so I found that jumping into it instead of like kind of ignoring it and letting it fester is the best way to handle it.
And I think that's great. And I love that you have the data and the metrics, which a lot of organizations don't have. So they're hoping people do the activities. They're looking at the bottom line. And it's essentially like managing or coaching a sport like a team. Like you said, you coach volleyball, you coach baseball, like any of those things that you're coaching. And only looking at the scoreboard to know how you're doing, and then only making adjustments based on that, or waiting until the end of the game to then look up and look at the scoreboard and go, how did we do? And what could we have done different, right? It's too late. And so the activities help you because really, like sports and sales, business, the only thing you control is your activities, right? You can't actually control the results. You can't control if somebody answers or if they buy or if you score touchdown or a home run. Like, you can't control that. You can just control the inputs and then hopefully set yourself up. So I think that's important, those metrics. I also love what you said, which it can be a slippery slope, but that if you talk to a salesperson the next day and they're like, hey, this one meeting went long, but it turned out really well, which again, at that point, the activities are good, but really what you want is the win, right? You want the W. And so if somebody's actually getting the results that you want, the activities that get there isn't always important in the moment. Long-term, yes, you got to be planting seeds so you can constantly have that. But I've seen that where somebody's made 2 phone calls in a day and closed 2 deals. Successful person can close 1 to 2 a day. This person did it. 2 long, perfect, like engagements. And that's it. Like that was success plus some other stuff.
Yeah. And you might have a different type of deal. I still remember there's another guy in town here that is in the insurance industry. And one of our guys is really good friends with him. And they're at a basketball game or something. And he was kind of ribbing him. And the guy that I work with, still kind of a little new in the insurance industry at the time, he's like, hey, how many accounts you close this month? And he's like, just 1. And he's like, I got like 10 or whatever. And he looks at him and goes, yeah, but mine was 7 figures. Right. So, and those accounts, it's just a different ballgame. They're a lot more work, right? So there's a lot more labor intensive. So you could close 10 accounts, but one guy closed 1 big one. I mean, he's running circles around you. So it just all depends, and they're all good. And that's what we tell our sales team too, is like, it doesn't matter whether you make 10 bucks a year off of it, or you're making 50 grand a year off of it. Those are all accounts that are important, and those people deserve the value and the service and things like that. But what are the activities that you're doing to lead you there so you stay on task? Because you mentioned it too, that all of a sudden, if you're not doing the activities, things could dry up. And we always talk about as your pipeline, right? Like, even though you're working on closing something, you need to be working on some of those leads that are going to generate income coming in once you've closed that up. So things aren't just dry then for the next 2 weeks. And then also you get to the end of the month and your paycheck isn't much because you're based off commission. So those are things to take into consideration as well.
And which is always important, right? Because a lot of people will say your results now are based on what you did 30, 60, 90 days ago.
Yeah.
And then everything leading up to it, depending on, again, your sales cycle, your process. But generally, that's true. Like, how many seeds are you planting? What relationships are you moving forward? Some transactions are always going to close quick. Some are going to take a long time. Like you said, you're going to hear no for maybe years, right?
Yeah.
And so it could be a long time. And then the one caveat before talking about culture moving on is kind of the example you said about the fact that you had the rep who, they had a good day, the activity metrics weren't there, but it was still a win, right? Like, they did a good job and they won. Is that if you're a salesperson listening to this, be careful, because generally what happens if somebody's not doing the activity, they're stuck in fear, they know they're not doing and they're procrastinating, their one mode is always sales and persuasion and justifying. And so be careful you're not trying to sell your boss on why it's not your fault. Like, if it's truly your fault because you didn't go to the gym to work out, like, you got to own up to it. So be careful. And then managers listening, you've got professional salespeople working for you. So be careful, because they're always going to sell you. They may always try to sell you, because instead of selling their clients, they're focused on selling you, which if they take that energy elsewhere, it would work better, right?
Well, I think too, that's why the people in leadership, I always tell people, it's like, I might own the company and yeah, I'm looking at profit and loss statements and I'm looking at, you know, different things coming in. But for me too, it comes down to actually caring about the individual person, because we all have different things that go on in our life too that could distract us. I'm in a situation right now, my dad's health isn't great. So there's times in the week I disappear for a few hours and I'm at mom and dad's house because I'm helping. So that might directly affect my sales. And we want to give people the leeway within our culture that we care about them first as a person, but that's why we're not going to let you just fall behind either. And we're going to have those real hard, honest conversations that a lot of people shy away from, or a salesperson will try to talk themselves out of, like you just mentioned, right? Because we actually care about them. And so it's so similar to coaching, and we're going to address it and fix it instead of looking up at the end of the game and saying, we lost 5-1, right? Why didn't we bunt here? Or why didn't we do this, right? So those are great things to always kind of keep in the forefront of your mind, that people aren't robots. And that's where the whole culture side comes into it too. So,
well, speaking of which, so that's a perfect segue. So one of the things you had sent me and what I had mentioned in the intro, and kind of one of the big things you focus on internally and also externally, is that culture is king. Talk more about that. Let's assume most people know corporate culture, mission, vision, values. But for you, like, where have you seen the biggest impact? Why is that so important to you to focus on almost primarily?
Yeah, we take that very seriously in our office. Culture is everything. Anybody that we recruit or we try to bring in, there's a purpose behind it, and they have to fit our culture. Our mission statement is serving in an honest, loving, and caring manner while being an active representation of Christ, our families, and community. And so for people that are going to represent our brand, it's extremely important they buy into that, that it's not about just them or making money. It's about serving. And what happens is when you get companies that are completely focused just on the sales side of thing and the numbers, and you got to be profitable. If you're going to be in business, you got to be profitable, right? So I'm not saying that making the sales isn't important, but what I'm saying is how you go about doing that. There's the lingo, the text thread on my phone for everyone in our office. If I'm going to send something out to the 15, 16 people, it's entitled Mana Fam. And we really operate like a family. And that's been really cool to see. We're involved in each other's families. We're involved in each other's lives. Like a couple of people in my office, they coach my kids in volleyball. I might do some of their stuff in baseball. I have a couple guys that help me coach at the high school for baseball too. So we're involved in a lot of different areas. And the other thing too is the culture, that the seeds that you're planting and cultivating within your clientele as well. And so I always tell clients, and I always tell my company reps that might represent a company work with Nationwide or Travelers or Berkeley North Pacific, whoever it might be, I say, this relationship, it's like a marriage. Like, we have to communicate. And that doesn't mean that we just communicate when we're mad. And it's been really interesting. I've sat on different agency councils and things like that. And what happens is these huge insurance companies ask for these agency owners for their different opinions. And what happens is a lot of times it just becomes a time for people to just sit around and complain about everything that that company's done wrong. My wife knows this, that my love language is words of encouragement. Like, having people around me, encouraging me, things like that, that's a big deal to me. I'm a glass half full guy, but if I'm constantly being worn down by all the negatives, that doesn't play very well into my psyche. And it's no different than with these companies. Why is a company rep going to want to stick their neck out for you on an account and say, hey, I know this is a little outside of our box, but we should write this because Dan says they really need it. They're not going to do that if I'm not filling in that cup. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have honest conversations when things don't go the way they should. But are you doing that in a respectful manner instead of cussing somebody out or yelling at them or just constantly complaining about everything, right? So it's a two-way street. And that goes with your company reps on our end, our vendors, as well as with our clientele and with our staff. And so how are you actually showing that you care about your team, right? More than just signing the checks, things like that. Are you going out of your way to make them feel appreciated, to tell them thank you? It's little things like that that play into it. It's funny, I always grew up, you always use please, you always say thank you, you always shake someone's hand and you look them in the eye. We're a baseball family. My daughter likes fast pitch and volleyball. My boys love baseball and football. And so we'll go out in the backyard and they say, Dad, can I pitch to you? And so I'll squat down and I'll catch them. But they know when we're done that they come up to me and they shake me in the hand and look me in the eye and say, thanks for catching me, Dad. Right? And there's little things that we're trying to teach them. You know, when you get up from dinner, you say, hey, may I be excused? Little things like that. It's funny how those little tiny things play into your daily lives and the relationships you have with your team at the office, as well as potential clients, clients you've worked with for a long time. It's amazing what kindness and respect and manners do. You know, it's the old saying, you catch more bees with honey, right? So those are the things that I think really play into our culture and what we've tried to create and what we've tried to expand upon, even with our clientele and the extended Mana family with our clients as well.
I absolutely love everything that you're talking about. I think that's so amazing. One of the things you said before I forget, and putting it on the screen here or in for people listening, is the five love languages is such a great thing to understand. I talk about this, and it's funny because people ask me for book recommendations. And if I have to give someone a general book recommendation without knowing anything about them, or for leadership, it's always the five love languages, which you had mentioned. Yours is words of affirmation, words of praise. I think it's so important. If you're unfamiliar with it, anybody listening or watching, it says basically everyone has a predominant one, maybe one or two love languages, gifts, acts of service, quality time, touch, and words of affirmation. And when you receive that, you feel loved and it's like what you want. Most people give what they like because most people are just by default self-centered. It's what we are as humans. And so they give what they want. So if you like presents, you'll give presents. When you're a leader, then what happens is if you're not careful, you'll give everyone what you want, but that might not be what they want, right? Because let's say you're my boss and you only give me words of affirmation. Like that's your main thing that you give, but I like gifts. Like I don't care what you say. You can say I'm great. You can say I'm a pile of crap. I literally don't care. Just give me stuff. Like that's how I know you love me and appreciate me. Then there's a disconnect, right? And it will never work. So the more you identify, and what I extrapolate, and this is why I bring this up as well, is for people who are in sales, relationship, even longer term, business to business, or something where it's a longer term sales cycle or relationship post sale, the more you can figure out a love language of your clients, your customers, those relationships, you can speak to them the way they want to be spoken to. It's a home run because they'll feel like you care at an even deeper level than probably anyone in their life. And they will trust you and then they will want to do business with you even more.
Well, it's not just that you feel like it, you do, because you're taking the time to understand what makes them tick, right? And so often we live in such a culture that is just so fast paced. Everything we need is right away. 2-day shipping from Prime or Walmart isn't fast enough, right?
Like
those are those things. And so it's like, we all get sucked into that, but taking the time to understand people and sitting back and actually thinking about it. I have a business coach that I meet with every, 4 to 6 weeks. And he took a company from $100,000 in revenue to 36 million. And then he handed it off to another guy. If I said the name, everyone would know him, and they're a phenomenal company. But one of the things he always said, he goes, it becomes my job to turn around in my chair in my office and put my feet up and look out the window. He goes, and that's when I do my best work, because it's my job to figure out where the company's going, where culture's at, all those different things. He goes, I have an incredible team of salespeople. I have an incredible operational team, shipping team, all that kind of stuff in the warehouse. But it really comes down to, like, my job as a leader is to make sure that we have the right people on the bus and the bus is going in the right direction, right? But you need to give your space and yourself time to think about those things. And when you think about your inner circle and your team and the people that you're working with, are you actually taking the time to invest in them, what makes them tick? Because if you're not taking that time, you don't really value them as a person and what drives them. To be honest, you're just kind of using them. Like, you spend a lot of time with your team at work. So they are your second family. You spend as much time with them as you do your own family, probably. So invest into them, love them, care about them, create that culture that it's fun to come to work, right? And that's where I feel like we've been really blessed with the team that we have, and people buy into that, and it's been awesome.
And one of the biggest lessons that I have learned is that the way that a company, the way that from the top down, the culture is, and the way that they treat their employees and how they do or do not value their employees, the expectations, accountability, coaching, sometimes it's tough love, but it's in a certain way versus other modes, will always translate into how the company treats its customers. And what's interesting going in reverse is, I know as a potential customer, is that if I interact with a salesperson or even multiple salespeople or representatives of a company, that is telling me everything I need to know about that company and what will happen when I'm a customer or whatever that long term is. And that's generally all I need to know. So I think that culture, obviously, it's important in everything you do, and it sets the framework for what the whole business experience will be.
Yeah. One of the fun things that I read in a book, I've never done this, I've been really tempted to, is if you're thinking about making a big hire and you're going to invest a fair amount of money in your payroll into this person, time, energy, everything else. I read this book one time that they took the potential hire out for breakfast and they intentionally told the waiter, the waitress to screw up their order ahead of time. They got there early and see how they react to that. And it's very interesting because it's very easy to be all happy with roses and everything like that in the honeymoon phase and things like that. But when the rubber meets the road and things get tough, that's when people's characters reveal. And so sometimes hard knowing when you're hiring that person, okay, it's easy in an interview process. I'm not a big fan of resumes, to be honest. I think you can put whatever you want in a resume, but how are they going to fit when things are difficult, right? And are they going to accept coaching? Are they going to be willing to be a part of a team in that? Or are they going to isolate? Are they going to get nasty? Anyway, that was just kind of something that came up and I thought I would mention that.
Yeah. And I've read that story as well. And I forget who had wrote that. I think that's a great example. I mean, anything you can do, especially in your hiring process, to mimic or identify the person's kind of personality and what their internal culture is and if it's a good fit, right? And what it looks like. And so let's lead into the next topic I want to talk about is what does it mean to be authentic? What does that mean for you?
People know what they're going to get. I'm sitting here in this new office building that we bought that we're going to remodel here in the next few months. And I'm in jeans and tennis shoes and a polo. And that's what you get from me. I mean, if I'm going to a big meeting or something like that, I'll throw on a suit and tie if I need to. But I can probably count with the number of fingers I have how many times I've had to wear a suit. And I just try to be me. I promise people, you know, I'll work really hard for you. I have integrity in what I do. I'll be honest with you. If you're better off somewhere else in the insurance industry, if I think your insurance policy or your coverage is just as good as what we have, and I can't find a competitive advantage either financially or from a service that we offer, stay where you're at. So for me, being authentic is you get Dan. It doesn't matter whether it's on a Sunday morning in a church pew or if it's Wednesday in the middle of the day on doing a podcast here or if it's working on a big account or coaching a high school baseball game. I'm a pretty laid back person and that's what you're going to get. And I think people, for the most part, appreciate that.
And obviously, it's a slightly judgmental comment, but I appreciate that. And I think that works really well when you're not that person who's then the weird person at the barbecue, because they're always that person, right? They're authentically over the top and just looking at everyone as a transactional means to an end. Obviously, it works better when you're not that, but even that's authentic. I guess you know what you're going to get. And there's that part. Let's talk about persuasion. So where do you see persuasion fitting in, or how do you define that in your terms?
Well, persuasion is an interesting topic. I'm not going to go political on this. But if you look at our country as a whole right now, we're very divided in a lot of different avenues. And we've gotten to the point as a country, we can't even have a conversation about what our beliefs are one way or the other without the other side starting to scream and yell. And it's very interesting because I think persuasion also comes across sometimes as almost a dirty word. It's kind of something sneaky. And I don't think that's what it is. I think persuasion really comes down to having the other side understand where you're coming from. Consulting company and Iron Brand Consulting, Kaylee, one of my business partners in there, went to Donald Miller's training with StoryBrand. And she went through the whole development process and got certified and everything like that. And StoryBrand's really all about making sure that you have clarity in your messaging. And so how do you simplify your message and make it clear? And a lot of times, especially as salespeople, we want to throw everything out there that we can offer. Right? Every last detail of why you should buy this product from me, why you should buy this insurance policy from me, why you should use this as a branding company, whatever it might be, instead of just keeping it simple. And I think that the whole authenticity part comes with that, because when you start just trying to just sell so hard, I actually think it starts working against you. But I'm trying to, I'll say, persuade someone to switch to Mana Insurance or to do consulting with us or whatever it might be. I'm really just trying to show them like, hey, we're here to serve. This is who we are. This is what we're about. This is why we do what we do. And we'd love to have you join our family, right? And so it really comes down to trying to understand like what their need is, what's their pain point, and then how we can help fill that. And one of the things that I ask every single client when I sit down with them for the first time is say, so there's tons, especially in our area. Like I live up in Whatcom County in Washington. We're right up as far northwest as you can go. We have a border crossing into Canada, Vancouver, BC. It's 45 minutes away from me. It's closer than Seattle is. I always ask people, because there's so many insurance agencies around here, I just say, what do you want out of your agent? You know, and really actually stopping and listening to your client. And so often we just come in guns a-blazing with, here's what we can do. We can save you $5,000 a year on this, and we can do this, this, and this. Does that sound good? Instead of actually stopping back and just saying, okay, let's qualify things a little bit. Let's try to understand, like, what do you want? Are you wanting someone to check in with you once a year? Are you wanting someone to just basically, unless it goes up by a whole bunch, don't contact me, let it slide? Are you wanting risk management consulting? All these different things. And so in order to try to get them to switch to you or to do business with you, I think it's really important that we actually understand what they need, what they want, what they're desiring out of it. And it's really hard to persuade people or meet people where they're at if you don't even know what their needs are. And again, it comes to that. So we got to do everything fast. And we live in a society that's always go, go, go. And I think that happens with sales a lot of times. And so for me, I want to come and say, hey, this is who we are. But more importantly, more than what we are, is what are you looking for? What do you need? how can we serve you and how can we meet a need that you have and be an extension of, we work with a lot of property management companies and investors on big apartment complexes, large commercial stuff, all up and down the West Coast. And so I just come and say, what are you guys looking for? You got an investment group of five people, and then you have this property management company running it for you. What do you want? Right? I want to be an extension of your team that you're not having to put on payroll, but you're going to have to buy this product anyway. So how can I help you? What are you guys looking for? And then that starts that conversation of the authentic persuasion, like you said, right? Of just like, hey, this is why I think we could fill that need for you, because we can do X, Y, and Z. And that's the need that you have there. And we can dial it up and tee it up perfect for you in that scenario. So every client's different what they want, but we got to take the time to understand, if we're going to persuade them to do business with us, we got to take the time to understand what their actual needs are.
So obviously, Kyle Gillette, who connected us, a very smart man, because he knew that we would hit it off really well. What you said is so powerful and useful, and obviously has to be done in a proper way. But literally, as you're talking, I'm just smiling and so happy, because what you're talking about in the line you said, which is, what do you want from, in this case, your insurance agent or your insurance policy? It could be, what do you want from a marketing platform? What do you want from a new vacuum, right? Like, literally, it doesn't matter. But that's such a great line. Like, if you don't take anything else and apply it to your sales process, sales career, change anything, even from listening to this conversation or anything in general, like, that one thing will be the game changer. And I coach people on this all the time, which is, goes under the line of, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Yeah. And fundamentally, nobody wants your monologue. Nobody needs your monologues in the beginning. At some point, yes, they want some information. I don't know why, and I'm working on fixing this in every conversation I can, just like these, is salespeople still think their job is to give monologues and features and benefits, right? People can search information. They can search data. Like, almost every human now, 24 hours a day, is all the world's information, right? Like, they don't need that. They want somebody who's going to guide them if they're talking to you. And that question, I think, is so key. And what is it that you want from whatever, just tell me, like, why are we talking and what do you want? Again, the caveat, though, is you've got to be careful, because I've seen salespeople do this with an impatient kind of confrontational tone. Well, tell me what you want from an insurance agent, right? Yeah. Like, that kind of thing. And that doesn't work. So you've got to mean it, right? That's why I always put some kind of empathetic spin and focus on that question, so that it comes from a proper place. Otherwise, yeah, that's it. And I think, to your point about how salespeople don't do this, they just instantly go into their stuff. Some of it's they don't care. Some of it's they're just stuck in that numbers game mode, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I got to make 100 calls. I got to talk to 100 people. If I throw out my pitch enough times, somebody will bite, right? It's just a numbers game, right? Like, if I ask enough people out on a date, then somebody's going to say yes eventually. It doesn't matter how terrible my pitch is. Somebody, it's going to work. And unfortunately, people get into that mode and it's limiting their results.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because within that, you'll get different responses from your clients, but it's critically listening. And it's listen. I heard this one time somewhere, it's listening to listen. You're not listening to respond.
Nope.
And so often we listen so we can say, yeah, but, instead of actually listening and just trying to take it in and processing it and thinking on it. There's a book I read. It was Chris Voss. Is his name. Yeah. He's a former FBI
hostage. Never split the difference.
Yes. Phenomenal. And I listened to it twice on Audible and while I'm mowing my yard. It's like my favorite thing to do is listen to audiobooks while I mow my lawn in the summertime. But phenomenal book. And he talks about just simple things and listening and not trying to be too quick to react. And he talks about shadowing and like saying the last few words that the person said as they were talking to you So two things that happens is you understand you're tracking with them, but they also understand that they've been heard, right? And even just pausing and being silent for a minute to take it in and then processing and then speaking. And so often, again, it comes down to we're so quick in the process. And that's why this whole COVID situation drives me nuts, because I'm such a relational person and I love to be in front of people and meeting with people and traveling a little bit and getting to meet with our clients and be on the ground. And there's something about being able to do that in person, right? And so it is what it is. But a lot of times, again, it comes down to truly listening to what your client needs and what they want. And if they say, hey, you know, I'm not sure, say, well, hey, we can coach you along that process. We can help, but I want to make sure that I'm not doing what I want, but I want to make sure that we're serving you and we're providing more than just selling you a policy. We're actually meeting a need of yours, right?
So valuable. And what's interesting, and this is what I say a lot, and I wrote about it in my book, which was that's just not happening in general, right? Like that listening thing. And if you do that for your prospective clients, you'll do something for them and give them a gift that I bet almost nobody in their life is doing for them either, right? Mm-hmm. Which is listening, asking questions, responding appropriately, not making it about yourself, wanting to know more and more from a curious, interested, caring place. That will blow most people away, unfortunately, this day and age. So let's switch just a little bit here with the time we have left. What is it that you wanted to be when you were growing up as a kid?
Major League Baseball player.
Makes sense. Will we see that? What happened? Why are we on a podcast talking about insurance?
You know, I topped out at about 88, 90 miles an hour. And I thought to myself, as I was kind of chasing that in college, I said, you know, every sixth kid in the Dominican that's 14 or 15 years old is throwing 95 plus and I'm right-handed. The chances of me making it, not a great chance. And I get sick on bus rides. So let's just call it what it is.
I was going to try to argue with you on that limiting belief that you couldn't do it, but sick on bus rides, maybe that was probably the sign.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Obviously what you do now, it's sales and what you've been doing for a while. What was the most non-sales job that you had?
So I was a youth pastor for about 8-9 years before I got into insurance, and actually straight out of college, I actually decided to kind of hang it up because the church that I ended up working at, my wife grew up in, we had met, we'd been kind of doing the long distance thing. And I was like, you know, chances of me making MLB is not very high, and a job in hand here of what I love doing is working with kids. And I still kind of do that with my coaching. And we're just actually launching another company, Line Drive Northwest, that is a hitting and training facility for baseball and fast pitch. And we just put all the turf in this weekend for that. And that's kind of my way I can stay connected with kids and provide a safe environment for them to come and do something instead of being in front of a screen. So that's kind of how I got into that. And love kids and working with them and providing safe opportunities for them. So.
And I would say you put that under the category of most non-sales job. I would say anything to do with kids, anything to do with teenagers, anything with getting them to do something and go some direction, that is pure leadership, pure persuasion, pure sales at its hardest.
I mean, Little Caesars was on speed dial, and you start throwing food at them and some pizza. I mean, I had it dialed into how many pizzas I needed for, you know, 125 kids showing up for an event, and I could dial that in. So yeah, you have fun with it and you love on kids and just meet them where they're at. And really, to be honest, sales for me isn't a lot different than ministry. It's really about taking care of people. And that's, it doesn't matter what business you're in, your handshake and your word need to mean something. You need to have integrity. I've been around people that I've seen them do deals and I'm like, that is just not right. And unfortunately, when money gets involved, sometimes people change. And that should just never happen. We always preach that to our team. We said, you're going to have opportunities to cut corners and do different things. You got to put that head on the pillow at night and you got to be able to sleep with a sound mind, knowing that you did your best, that you did things right with integrity and you did your best for the client. So yeah, it's fun working with kids and it's fun having the opportunity just to continue to try to serve people in a different way in a sales capacity now.
And you're right. It is all sales, depending on what you look at the term sales. I mean, previously my show before I pivoted to this name, the way I ended every show was everything in life is sales, right? And because it is, at some level, there's something and some action being taken. Last question, the journey or the destination?
I think the journey. I very much have the personality, and my wife will tell you this, and even the people around me, I'm a dreamer. I think really big, and I don't even tell my wife half the ideas I come up with, but it's fun. But a lot of times when you get there, it can be kind of empty too. And so enjoying building things, and like, I'm really good at like getting the ball off the ground and then having my team of people who are just phenomenal around me, just take the ball and run with it. And so those are really cool teams to be a part of. And we're raising our families together. We're working hard. Right now with this whole COVID thing, some of the schools are back in, some aren't. I mean, it hasn't been out of the question that all of a sudden I walk into the office and there's three kids with iPads sitting on the floor next to mom or dad's desk doing their schoolwork. And it's because family comes first for us in everything that we do. And that's part of the journey, right? That's part of doing business together and raising each other's families. It's an old saying, it takes a village, right? And so I enjoy the journey. I enjoy what I do. There's some days, any job, you're just like, oh man, this sucks. But for the most part, every day is awesome. And I have truly a family of people around me at work that I just love to death. So
awesome. I love it all. All right. So for people to connect with you, find what you're doing. So there's manainsurancegroup.com, which is the insurance side. Check out what you're doing there. I know that you said that you're licensed in lots of states, so they can check it out there, not just Washington State. If they're interested, want to connect with you or see what you're doing and maybe model, you know, as far as the culture goes and everything we talked about. I mean, I think I know that you would love people to run with what you're doing and help change that as well. Yeah. And then you have ironbrandconsulting.com. And then I also know that you're really active on LinkedIn. So people can find you, Daniel Vanderkooi, and that's K-O-O-I. They find you on there. I'm pretty sure you're probably the only one on there with that name. So there's probably not a lot, a lot of competition for that. And Daniel, I appreciate your time on here. I appreciate what you're doing from a sales, from a culture, business, internal relationship. I mean, I just appreciate what you stand for and what you're doing. So thank you for that in the world. And then thank you for joining me on the podcast and sharing all this with everybody.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason. I really appreciate you having me on. This is great. And I think anytime you can talk business and life and leadership and culture, it's key to every day. And so hope you have a great success in your podcast. And it's awesome being part of this. So thank you very much.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And that's it for this show. And make sure to subscribe. If you are subscribed, rate, leave a review, also share this. I appreciate that. You can also go and find more information about being an authentic persuader at authenticpersuasion.com. The book is available there as well. And that's it. And I'll catch you on the next conversation about authentic persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.